I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. A new novel published today is The Transaction by Guillermo Dizia. He joins me now to talk about his debut work about a man named D'Angelis from the north of Italy who travels to a small town in Sicily in the south for business. The journey descends not just geographically, and I'll get Mr. Dizia to tell us as much as he'd like about his book. It is a lively, rich, and evocative work. I'll ask its author about writing it, his background, growing up in Italy, and coming to Canada. He was born and raised in Sicily and is an actor, writer, cinephile, gourmand, and traveler. He is a graduate of the Creative Writing Program at the University of Toronto School of Continuing Studies. The book is published by Guernica Editions. Visit guillermodizia.com for more information. He joined me from Toronto a couple of weeks ago. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Guillermo Dizia. Mr. Dizia, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I haven't finished the book, but I'm enjoying it a great deal. It's just a fascinating, you just have a marvelous way of describing the things that D'Angelis sees. Did it take a while for you to decide while you were writing the book what voice you would use to tell this story?
Well, that's an interesting question, actually. The voice was actually the problem, the real challenge in the book. You read some of it, and it's written in first person, mm-hmm. but for some reason, we never get inside the character's head. So that was a challenge for me. There was a lot of tiptoeing. That took a lot of doing, certainly, to be able to avoid getting inside the character. That was a choice from my part. That came about. So I was thinking about this for a long time. I had these images in my head, but I didn't have a voice. And then one day I read this wonderful novella by Peter Handke. The goalie's anxiety at the penalty kick,
uh-huh.
and that is the moment when I basically knew how I was going to write it. The two novels have nothing in common. It's just the way Henke approached the narrative voice, where the reader is never allowed inside the character's head. That really opened up a lot of a whole set of possibilities for me. And that's when I knew how I was going to write it.
So the when we first meet D'Angelis, he's boarding the train, and he's going from where to where?
From Milan to Sicily.
So for a lot of us, when we think of Italy, we don't consider sort of the geography of it or the regional differences, I guess. Milan is somewhere, I guess Sicily is south of, it's right at the, I guess, the bottom there, right?
Yes, yes.
And then Milan is somewhere north of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, correct. So he's going, back then in the 80s and 90s, that was a long journey. It really was. It was mm-hmm. like a sort of a 24-hour journey by train. It was an exhausting journey. It still is. That train still runs.
Uh-huh.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And so when we meet him, it's a relatively normal isn't the right word, but it's sort of the train journey that one expects, and then it soon goes down from there, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Well, I mean, obviously things don't go as planned for him, and it starts with the train breaking down in the middle of nowhere, and from then on, it's just things get worse. I don't want to give it away. Obviously, I don't want to give it away too much, but things definitely get worse from then on. And he finds himself in this land where he barely understands what people are saying to him.
Uh-huh.
Sicilian is very different from Italian, so and this is totally unfamiliar to him, and he feels completely estranged and sort of lost, really. And he's trying to figure out what happened. That was what happened with his transaction.
Yeah, and so when you talk about this idea of a barely recognizable, estranged from what he's encountering, it's sort of like, because I don't read very much fiction, and I know very little about Italy other than the things that I know about, say, Italian-American culture, which is very different, obviously, than Italy itself. We're sort of navigating it with him, aren't we?
Yes. Yes, we are. In a sense, I wrote it in a way that it's written in present tense, so the reader discovers things as he does, as the character does, at the same time. The reader is never ahead or behind the character, the main character, the Angeles. That was by design. I wanted to be a complete surprise for everybody, for the character and for the reader. Hopefully I achieved that, and I wanted to create this sense of disorientation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when suddenly everything is at an angle, you know, askew, and very much like right now, you know, we are in a sense right now what's happening with the pandemic, and then we're forced to stay at home. Everything is suddenly different. You know, small things that were normal all of a sudden aren't. Even just, you know, doing grocery right now feels so strange, for instance. Right? So I wanted to create the same thing for him in that environment where everything should be normal, but it isn't, really.
So, yeah, I have the feeling as I'm reading the book, I'm trying to figure this out, just as he's trying to figure out what's happening around him and all the strangeness around him. Mm-hmm. And that's the fun part. I mean, I'm enjoying the book because of that. When you're writing it, though, because writing, you know, it's a job for you. It is solitary. It is tough. Are you having fun writing it?
Oh, I had a lot of fun writing it. This was really a passion project, really was. I didn't even think it was going to get published, to be honest. Because I really wrote it for myself. Like, I wrote something that I wanted to read. So I didn't really think of, in terms of sales or, you know, being commercial or anything like that. Quite the contrary, really. I had a lot of fun writing it. I really enjoyed it.
And the thing that I've noticed as I'm reading the book is the voice. The writing, it's so clear, it's evocative, funny, it's rich in detail. What one reviewer, I guess, described the book, described you as writing with a certain confidence, and I found that awfully refreshing. Do you have an idea where that might come from?
My background is in acting, and, you know, I've read a lot of plays, a lot of a lot of dramas and stuff like that. So I'm kind of used to reading things really as spare and to the point and very, very focused. So I guess that comes partly from that. And also I didn't want the writing to be in the way of the story. I wanted to be absolutely clear, crystal clear, nothing purple, and evocative at the same time, as you said. And that was the hardest part, to be evocative but sparingly. So, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's a challenge, you know, to be evocative with very few words. But that was very rewarding, really, to achieve that. Hopefully I did.
You also seem to write with a sense of the visual, the cinematic. I mean, a lot of the images that I'm reading in the transaction sort of come alive in my mind's eye. Do you pay attention to that? I mean, is that deliberate, say, on your part as a writer?
That was absolutely by design. Because, that's what that, you know, when I said at the beginning that we never get inside his head, so I had to find ways to steer away from that. And so the character is really very descriptive. And so he's very anchored with the external world. So I chose to be very visual for that reason. And that kind of, you know, if you really pay attention to it, you realize that, you know, this is this is the why we never get inside his head, and he's sort of a, kind of a trick, really.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was also because this, you know, again, my background in acting and also filmmaking and so forth. So that's what it comes from as well. I've always been a very visual person, so I guess that translates to writing as well.
You said a moment ago that you don't want to give away what else happens in the book, and I don't want you to either, because I'm, as I said, I'm reading the book and I can't wait to finish it. In terms of how everything sort of comes apart and it descends, if you will, in his experience, because of the way the story is told, do we get a sense of D'Angelo's learning about who he is and sort of the choices one makes?
This is not easy to answer this one without giving away certain things. let me just say,
I'm also sneaky as a reader.
I know what you're driving at. Let me just say this. He does learn something about himself. That is the whole point. He does learn something about himself. With the book, I was interested in dissecting, in a way, the moment of discovery, of self-discovery. So you're right. He does discover something about himself. Whether he's going to do the right thing or we don't even know what the right thing is.
Right.
Whether he's going to do it or not, you're going to have to read the book and find out. But, that's the whole book is about that. The whole book is about moral ambiguity and the fallibility of perception.
How do you get to a point where you want to write about that? I mean, this is obviously your first book, but these are things you've thought about, obviously, in the course of one's life.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a moment in your own life where you think, you know, maybe I want to explore that, or maybe you already have explored that and you want to write it down for someone else, say?
Without getting into details, personal details and stuff like that,
uh-huh.
I'll just say that growing up in Sicily, you know, especially in the 80s and 90s, you know, during the mafia wars and so forth, you get, you know, you see things, you witness stuff, and you grow up in a certain, in a different environment where moral codes are not exactly normal. They're pretty warped. So I've definitely thought about long and hard about morality and ethics and how the environment, sort of where we are, where we live, what surrounds us, how it affects our sense of morality and our perceptions as well. So that's I think, what I wanted to explore with the book.
Does morality mean the same thing everywhere? I mean, I guess it doesn't. I mean, it may have a different meaning in one part of the world as opposed to another, one religion from another, one culture from another, doesn't it?
I mean, I don't want to, obviously I'm not talking about moral relativism.
Sure.
But it definitely affects where you are, where you live, how you grew up. It definitely affects the way you see things. Whether you want it or not, it just happens. It's just the way it is. And then when you're suddenly not there anymore, you're somewhere else, and you get to see things differently all of a sudden. So I can't possibly say that environment, where you live, how you grew up, it doesn't affect that. It does.
Yeah. And do you find when you write a story like The Transaction, that readers, regardless of where they are, understand, say, where, not necessarily the author himself, but where the story comes from? Do you think the reaction, say, in Canada would be different if it was read, say, in Italy itself?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yes, it's definitely different readers are going to see this differently. That's for sure. There are certain things in the novel that are, like, not spoken. They're probably not going to be picked up in certain areas. Mm. You know, certain readers won't really necessarily see those things or understand even certain things, simply because they haven't been exposed to those things, obviously. At least not as much as I did. So they might lose some, you know, might actually miss some nuances, but that's okay. I mean, all of, you know, as a whole, it still works. Doesn't matter where you are.
I was just thinking, as you were saying, as you were speaking, that's a marvelous thing about fiction, isn't it? In terms of, you know, I mean, the differences in culture are stark. I'm talking to you from Vancouver. You're in central Canada. They're different there already, and you know, we're Canadian, essentially. Fiction is a marvelous way to learn about people, and I think cultures in different parts of the world more than, say, nonfiction even.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, even within Italy, you know, someone from Milan is like the character, like the main character,
uh-huh.
finds himself completely, you know, lost in Sicily. And, you know, it's so culturally different. And it's almost a shock. I'm not exaggerating. It really is very, very different,
mm-hmm.
profoundly different. You know, even within Sicily, for instance, you have we speak different vernaculars, like
mm-hmm.
from one side of the island to the other.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't understand people from Palermo, for instance. I don't know what they're saying.
Yeah.
And that's a tiny island. You know, it's incredible the variety, the differences. And, you know, thanks to fiction, we can actually, bring these cultural differences to everybody, you know, so expose everybody to this. It's marvelous. It's fantastic, as you said. This is a great way to discover other cultures.
And hopefully understand another culture, especially in these times where we're isolated. We need to bring in... I guess we want to bring in the world in our whatever space we're in, don't we?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Thankfully, you know, during this time, we books, fiction, nonfiction, but especially fiction, will allow more people to really get exposed to other cultures and sort of understand other cultures, be more tolerant of other cultures. And I'm not saying that people are not by and large tolerant of other cultures.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying.
Sure,
but
yeah.
You know, this is a great chance of even exploring even more of that. And fiction is a great vehicle for that. It's an incredible vehicle for that. Sure, the novel is about Sicily, takes place in Sicily. However, you know, I achieved that. In a sense, I wanted to be universal, and hopefully I was able to do that. But you can tell me that. I don't know.
I think you have, yeah. What have you, this past month, what has that been like for you amidst COVID? I mean, how do you fill your time?
Well, I'm trying to, next week, in 2 weeks, I'm going to have my book launch. So pretty much working for the book right now and promoting and all that stuff. We're trying to do as much as we can virtually right now, so
right.
doing that. But I'm also already writing my second book and also a TV pilot.
Uh-huh.
And, just writing mostly. That's what I'm doing. You know.
And the process for you as a writer, I mean, is there a lot of reading that's also part of it?
Yes and no. Prior to write yes.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because there's that anxiety of sort of being influenced by what you're reading at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's I can't really seep into your writing well, if you're reading it at the same time. So when I actually write, I read mostly nonfiction.
Mm.
To avoid any influence.
This is your first book, but as I'm reading it, and a lot of other people have said this. I mean, I mentioned one review a moment ago. One notices that there's a sort of maturity in the voice. Did you always want to be a writer?
That's a good question. Secretly, yes. I had to overcome some serious sense of shame before I started writing. I didn't know. I didn't think I could do it for the longest time. I don't have a bachelor degree. I don't have formal education. So I mostly studied acting, and so that was it. That was my education.
Mm-hmm.
So I always felt that I couldn't do it. So, yeah, I had to overcome that sense of shame first. Also because of my family. For instance, my mother is illiterate. She can't read or write, for instance. So it's been strange for me. It's been very strange.
And
become a writer.
Yeah, and so when you study writing as you have, you studied at the University of Toronto in creative writing. Is that right?
Yeah, I did a certificate.
Yeah, what does a school like that teach you then? I mean, does it help you gain the confidence that you need to not only write a book like The Transaction, but to continue, say?
Yes, it definitely helped. I'm not going to lie. It did. At least for me, it really did it. Because I was so ashamed. I didn't know I could do it. And then took the first class, and thankfully, it was the right teacher. It was the perfect teacher for me. And he understood it right away, and he really helped me coming out of my shell, really. And he loved the work immediately, and that's actually what I developed, The Transaction, really, at least the first half.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I ended up winning the Marina Namad Award, which is given to final projects for the certificate.
Yeah, Marina, also a great writer herself. I guess a school like U of T, it teaches, as you've just said, it teaches you something. But the skill itself in storytelling, that must have come from somewhere else. I mean, that must have been something you were born with. Is it?
I think so. I think so. It's not something that anybody can teach you.
Yeah, I'll bet, yeah.
They can give you tools and, how to refine your storytelling abilities, how to edit yourself, how to make things a little stronger and so forth. But they can't teach you writing. They can't. You either have it or you don't. It's not gonna lie. It's just you have to have it.
Yeah. What process of writing do you least enjoy?
Charts, outlining. I can't stand it. It doesn't work for me. That part just doesn't work for me. I just don't work that way. My brain is not wired that way. I start with images, with the snippets, and that's where I start. When I actually start writing something, I don't even know what the story is. Not yet.
Yeah.
I discover it as I go, because I believe in organic writing. I don't pre-plan too much. Not really.
I've talked to a lot of authors over the years, Guillermo, and a lot of people say that, a number of people, I should say, have said that they have sort of outlined something or had an idea of where a character was going to end up. But in the process of writing, they just go some other way, and they can't even explain how that happens. They think it's the character themselves coming to life. I mean, is that the same for you, I guess?
Absolutely, yes. That's when you write organically, and you let the narrative sort of tread freely, intrinsically. That's what it takes you, because you let your characters surprise you, and that's the beauty of it. That's what keeps you interested in writing and excited, and makes you want to go forward. You can't wait. Sometimes, I'm not going to lie to you, I was really looking forward to the scene because I didn't know where it was going to take me. I was so excited. it's not joking. It's true. The main scene, I'm not going to give it away, but there's a climax. Uh-huh. And that scene, the way I thought it was going to be, was very different. I thought it was going to be super talkative, a lot of dialogue. Instead, it turned out to be the complete opposite. The complete opposite. No dialogue at all.
Mm-hmm. You're talking to someone who's not a writer, and so I'd like to know what that feels like at an exciting moment when you're writing. And you're obviously writing is a solitary experience, and so you're probably alone when you're committing your writing. When there's one of these moments of, say, magic, if you will, mm-hmm. What does that feel like?
It's exhilarating. When you read a scene, you actually just finish writing a scene, and then you realize that you got it. And it's an amazing feeling. Well, to me, it was just huge weight off my shoulders all of a sudden, and especially that particular scene I was mentioning before.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the crucial scene. I was so afraid of it. I don't know. I didn't know how I was going to write it, and then it happened, and I was so overwhelmed with happiness when that happened. It's hard to describe, really, what you feel, but it's definitely the exhilaration is what that comes to mind. You feel absolutely almost inebriated in a way.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, because I mean, there's so much writing that moves a reader. One can only imagine what that was like, the moment the writer, wrote it.
Oh, there's a difference. When you finally write the last word, and then you write the end, that is just it. That is incredible. That is an incredible moment, let me tell you that. Especially when you spent, years writing it, and then all of a sudden it's there. You're finished. It's almost unreal. You don't believe it. It's there. You're done. But it's hard to come to terms with it.
Because
in a way, it's done. Now you have to move on. It's done. And this is that sort of, I don't want to say depression that comes afterwards, but sort of.
There's a down, isn't there?
Characters in a way. You feel happy that you finished, obviously, but then there's a sort of a depression that comes afterwards. Maybe it's not the same for everybody, but definitely that was the case for me.
Yeah. I guess it's sort of like as the performer describes sort of coming down or the difficulty to come down. There is that sort of, I guess, tension that's gone at that moment. And it's hard to explain, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. It really is because, you're happy that you're done. And then again, it's over. You have to let go of those characters, and you've become very fond of. It's just a strange moment, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Move on to other projects.
Well.
Although,
long may there be many wonderful moments for you as you continue to write it. It's it's a dazzling book. I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying it, and so appreciate your time today for giving us some insight into the book and into writing itself.
Thank you so much. It was really my pleasure.
The website for more is at guillermoditzia.com. The book is called The Transaction. It is published by Guernica Editions. Guillermo Ditzia joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.